Greek culture became fundamental in the Mediterranean world. The Koine Greek language, Koine in Greek means common. The common language of this Hellenistic world became Greek. Not the highfalutin Greek of the greatest of the Athenian writers, a commoner, a more ordinary form, hence the name, but nevertheless, it spread very widely. The Greek influence became dominant in, for example, art, in architecture. Greek influences in literature spread very, very widely. Greek philosophy remained dominant. Though we're going to see it was changed in some very interesting ways during this Hellenistic period. Now, in Alexander's death, to come first of all to the sort of political shape of this Hellenistic world, let's get a sense of just how it was organized. Who was out there? Who were the players? On Alexander's death, his generals, basically, at least three of the most important of them, carved up this vast world that he had conquered. You may just recall my having said that Alexander died very young, and he had not made any formal provision, either for how he was going to rule this world, or indeed for what might one day succeed to him. So we don't really know what his plans would have been. What we know is what happened, and that is that his generals carved this world up. Now one of these, whose name was Antigonus, his descendants are called the Antigonids, took Macedon and the Balkans. Basically, in other words, went back and took the old Macedonian homelands and the Greek peninsula where Philip II and Alexander had made their first conquests. Gradually, slowly, over time, the Greek lands to the south of Macedon sort of broke away and formed a more or less autonomous league, an autonomous realm, sort of under their own supervision, under their own government, but with supervision from the Macedonians to the north. In the western Balkans, we may just mention, a small kingdom called Epirus emerged. This is something that was actually characteristic of the Hellenistic world, that a fair number of small kingdoms arose midst these great ones. Epirus I'll mention simply because we'll encounter them again in a later lecture as enemies of Rome. I'm not going to detail again and again and again all of these little kingdoms that arose. Basically, there were, as we'll see in just a second, three big ones. So the Antigonids formed the first of these big ones. Now, in the lands lying at the eastern end of the Mediterranean, Syria, Palestine, northern Mesopotamia, southern Anatolia, those territories fell to a general by the name of Seleucus. And the dynasty then which he establishes, the Seleucid dynasty, most of the rulers of the Seleucid dynasty were named either Seleucus or Antiochus. And if those names just ring a bell, you may have encountered them in the very last books of the Hebrew scriptures, the very last books of the Hebrew Bible. Judas Maccabeus revolted against, for example, these rulers. So they have a kind of a purchase on our attention, quite independent of their a position as successors of Alexander the Great. It's worth mentioning one of the other smallish kingdoms that emerged, and this is Pergamum, which emerged in central Anatolia, an area which the Seleucids were unable effectively to dominate. And so the little kingdom of Pergamum arose in central Anatolia. I mention that one because, again, the Romans and the Pergamenes will have dealings with each other late in the 2nd century B.C. But that is a story for a later day. I just want to forecast that we will come back to this. In Egypt, finally, the last of Alexander's great generals, Ptolemy, marched off to Egypt, took over the land of Egypt, and established a dynasty of rulers there, which persisted until, indeed, 31 B.C. The last of the Ptolemies, of course, was the famous Cleopatra, who, it is important to say, was not Egyptian at all, but Macedonian. Now, these various Hellenistic kingdoms, the large ones and the small ones, warred with one another often, were great rivals of one another most of the time, allied with one another occasionally in the face of common threats. For example, later on, in the face of the threat posed by the Romans. What we will see in later lectures is that the Romans marched into the eastern Mediterranean and conquered these Hellenistic kingdoms one by one by one. And it was really the final conquest of these Hellenistic kingdoms that marked the definitive rise of the Roman Empire in the eastern Mediterranean world. All right, so that's basically the political shape of the Hellenistic world. Three great kingdoms, the Antigonids, the Seleucids, and the Ptolemies, arrayed between and among a series of smaller kingdoms with this rising threat to them of Rome. But it's the cultural and not the political diplomatic, military history of the Hellenistic world that is really interesting and important to us. And this is what we want to spend the majority of our time talking about. It was a world of great wealth, in part because of sort of a very large, something like free trading zone was generated by these vast conquests of Alexander and his successors. It was a time of the rapid and easy movement of peoples. One of the things very interesting in the sources for this period is how many people from one place wind up prominent, active at any rate, in places very far away. There's an enormous amount of travel, an enormous amount of exchange in this world. It's a time of rapid cultural dissemination. This is a period when we can really see cultures spreading. Now, the great statues themselves are, in fact, some centuries later than the period I'm talking about now. But a very interesting example of this are those spectacular Buddhas that were destroyed in Bamiyan in the year 2001 by the Taliban. The largest of them was arrayed with